Welcome back to The Source on KSTX 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In the near future, 20 to 40 years from now, medical science will be at a point where most people in the developed world will no longer have sex for the purpose of having babies. Making babies the old-fashioned way will be seen as too risky, maybe even barbaric. Instead, doctors will be able to screen embryos, eliminate genetic defects, maybe pump the gas on intelligence, hand-eye coordination, and good looks, then move to implantation, gestation, and birth. What will this mean for humanity? Will it give rise to a genetically superior generation? What about the questions of ethics, law, society, faith, and family? Well, that's all going to have to be worked out, and we should start thinking about it now. We're joined by Henry T. Greeley. He's a professor of law and the director of the Center for Law and Biosciences at Stanford University, and we invite you into our conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to the source at tpr.org, and the title of his new book is The End of Sex and the Future of Human Reproduction. And Henry, welcome to Hank. Welcome to The Source.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me on.
So let's just go quickly over the science. What is the science?
So here's what's going to happen, I think. And these are predictions. They might be wrong, but they're my best guess. We have for 25 years been able to do a procedure called pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. Most people think this is science fiction. It's been around for a long time. 4,000 American babies were born after this last year. You take a 3 or 5 day old embryo, take a few cells off it, do genetic tests on those cells, and use the results to help determine whether you want to transfer that embryo for possible implantation, pregnancy, and birth. Right now, only about 4,000 kids were born using it last year because in order to use it, you have to do IVF. You have to be able to get a hold of that embryo at day 3 or day 5, and if you get pregnant the old-fashioned way, that embryo is going to be halfway down one of the two fallopian tubes in the woman. Good luck finding it. IVF is expensive, and at least for the woman, uncomfortable and even risky. About 0.5% of women who go through egg harvest each year end up in the hospital. Life's unfair. I don't think any man ends up in the hospital from sperm harvest. So with what's going to happen to lead to what I call in the book easy PGD is we'll be able to take skin cells and turn them into what are called induced pluripotent stem cells, cells that are like human embryonic stem cells in that they can form every cell type. We're going to use those to make eggs and sperm. It's been done in mice already. The first steps have been taken in people. Healthy mice have been born after this. We're not close to human trials. I hope we won't even get close to human trials for another 10 to 15 years because of the safety issues. I think this is coming. The other side of it is right now when you do PGD, you can only look for 1 or 2 genetic traits. Whole genome sequencing is getting so much cheaper. It's gone from $500 million 15 years ago to $10 to $1,000 right now. Once you get whole genome sequencing, you can find out everything genetics can tell you about each of, say, 100 embryos. Genetics won't be able to tell you everything about them, but it'll be able to tell you something about the 1 to 2% of embryos who would have a really nasty early childhood genetic disease, other embryos who might be at high risk for breast cancer or Alzheimer's disease. It may tell you something about the cosmetics, hair color, eye color, skin color, a little bit, I think only a little bit, about behaviors like math ability, music ability, sports ability, and of course it can tell you boy or girl. That's that combination, I think, is going to lead to most parents who have good health coverage in 20 to 40 years making their babies this way. Most of them will do it to try to avoid that 1 or 2% of babies born with really serious genetic diseases. Some will look for later diseases. Some will be interested in sports ability or hair color or boy or girl.
And this so many different questions that this brings up. And you're a law professor, and you're looking at it from a legal standpoint?
I'm a law professor. I look at it from a legal standpoint, but also from an ethical standpoint. And you know, to some extent, a medical and even financial standpoint. The book's a little over 300 pages because there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, and I think you're just there's even more you can talk about. It's just amazing some of the things that you bring up. One of the most curious ones was the uniparent. And so as you talked about being able to take a skin sample or any sample of somebody and being able to harvest that DNA and create sperm and egg, and then you would be able to create a child and the embryo from that one individual.
Right. So
and that's not a clone. That's not a clone.
No, but the uniparent would take another step, but one that I think is likely to be possible and will be very attractive to some people. Right now, there are several million couples in the U.S. who cannot have genetic children who share half of each of their genome, because although they make eggs and sperm, they both make eggs or they both make sperm. So gay and lesbian couples right now can't have genetic children that are entirely from themselves. If we can make eggs and sperm from stem cells, as I believe we will be able to do, there is a good chance that we could actually make eggs from men and sperm from women, or spermish things that work well enough as sperm to fertilize an egg. The main market for that, the main driver for that, would be same-sex couples. But and it was one of my law school colleagues who pointed this out. I don't think I was quite egomaniacal enough to think of it. The same person could take his own eggs, his own sperm, combine them, and make his own baby. I refer to that as a uniparent and a unibaby. The baby would not be a clone in every place where, say, let's say if you did it, every place where you've got two copies of the same version of a gene, so you might be type A, type O blood, so you've got two copies of the type O allele, the baby would be like you. But if you had an A and an O, and were type A blood as a result, there's a 25% chance the baby would get two A's and be type A, a 25% chance the baby would get two O's and be type O, and a 50% chance the baby would get an A and an O. So it would be similar to you, but it wouldn't be a clone. I don't know how attractive that will be. I think it will be very unattractive, but it's a big world, and there are a lot of crazy people in it.
What is the biggest concern that you have about this type of technology going mainstream?
So I got to give you three. The first is safety. Being able to make healthy babies from a stem cell-derived egg or sperm is a big deal. If I do some gene therapy and it doesn't work out, you know, I'm 63 years old, I've had a good run, I made a decision to do it, but to make a baby with the risk of serious disability for that child, that baby didn't volunteer to be a research subject. So safety is a huge, is actually my overwhelming concern. My second biggest concern is the potential effects on inequality. I don't think we're looking at a speciation event. I think these babies will not be super babies. We don't know how to make super babies. But they'll be 10 to 20% healthier and somewhat closer to their parents' expectations. They won't be exactly what their parents expect, because no kid is. As a parent of two, I can say that with great confidence. But they'll be closer. And if only rich people could do this, that's a problem. It's
right.
Not a huge problem. I mean, it's not a huge increase. Rich people's kids already are about 10 to 20% healthier, but adding another 10 to 20% would be
okay, Hank, I'm going to take a break. We're going to hear about your third concern when we come back from the break. 210-614-8980. This is The Source. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Breakthroughs in biomedical science, genetics, and stem cell research has placed us at the doorstep of a brave new world. Could designer babies be coming? The elimination of birth defects and genetic disorders, but what else? Could we see a genetically superior generation coming? This could be a Pandora box, opening up questions of ethics, law, society, faith, and family. What does this mean for the future of humanity? These are questions that are posed in the book The End of Sex and the Future of Human Reproduction by Henry T. Greeley, and he is a professor of law, the director of the Center for Law and Biosciences at Stanford University. And Hank, when we went to break, you were telling us about your three main concerns about this technology. You said safety, inequality, and what else?
Coercion. I'm less worried about this in the U.S. than in some countries, but I can imagine a government that says, you cannot choose an embryo that has a disability, or you cannot choose an embryo that is not predicted to be in the top half of intelligence, or you cannot choose an embryo that doesn't have the gene for loving the dear leader, or whatever it is. I think the coercion comes in many forms. It could be a government. It could be a health insurance company. It could be a mother-in-law or a father-in-law. But I think limiting parental choice should be done only very sparingly and very carefully. Because I think even though there are crazy parents out there, for the most part, I trust parents to be interested in the best interests of their kids.
Right. But, you know, we are already deciding what sort of, you know, in the practice of selecting genetic makeup of our children, we call it dating. You know, we're trying to find the most appropriate mate for us, and we're looking for someone who is healthy and who will provide a healthy baby making stuff.
Yeah, although looking back, and it's a long way back for me, there were many things that attracted me to my wife, but I don't remember thinking, looks like good breed stock. So that is part of our equation, but it's not everything in our equation. But yes, we have been worried about, we have made selections that affect the genes of our kids for a long time. An important distinction, the process I'm talking about, EZPGD, is selection. It's picking embryos. The rise of new gene editing techniques, particularly one called CRISPR, opens the possibility for so-called designer babies, where you, with selection, all you can get out of a couple is what the couple has to give. With editing, you can put new genes in that neither one of the couple has. So those are two different routes the future might take. I think the selection is much closer on the horizon, the safety issues are lower, but they both raise a whole host of issues around safety, quality, family structure, coercion, and inchoate one. Either people will react either that it's playing God or it's not natural, depending in part on what their theology, own religious views are. That's a deeply held visceral reaction that a lot of people have to this.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. We're talking about the end of sex and the future of human reproduction. And Clayton is on the line. Clayton, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air. And let me try this again. Clayton.
Are you there?
Yeah. Okay, I got it. Go ahead.
Okay. In all due respect to your guest, I think what his assertions have failed to take into account is that at least half, if not two-thirds of the world, cannot afford this kind of technology. And can you imagine yourself living in a third-world country being told that over there the people that control the economy where you live are Uber people? I seriously doubt if in 40 years we're all going to be born in a test tube. You would have to sterilize everyone else first and then force them to use this technology. We forget that our country right now and countries in Europe are being swarmed and swamped by the people poor fleeing the third world countries. You have to be realistic about the world as it exists now. And that's my opinion.
Okay.
I will listen to my reaction off the air.
All right, Clayton, thanks for the call.
And so, in fact, I agree with you. And the second of my big concerns was about equality, whether it's the rich or the poor. My own guess, frankly, is in most developed countries, this will be free because it will save the public health. It'll save the healthcare systems a lot of money.
About how much?
But I'm sorry?
About how much? I mean, like billions and billions of dollars?
So let's say that it costs $10,000 to make a baby this way, which is, it's crazy to estimate healthcare costs 30 years ahead, but I'll do it anyway. If it costs $10,000, 100 babies cost you $1 million. How many children born with bad genetic diseases, births, do you have to prevent to save $1 million? About 0.2. So it has the potential to save the healthcare system billions and billions of dollars, which I think won't lead the U.S. to make it mandatory, but will lead it to be subsidized and free. But Clayton has a absolutely perfect, absolutely right point. it may be universal throughout the United States and Western Europe and China and Japan. It's going to be a long time before it gets to Paraguay or Laos or the Central African Republic, at least to the 95% of those countries that are not the rich elite. The international inequalities are going to be much bigger problem, I think, than the domestic internal inequalities, at least within developed countries. It's one of the problems to be worried about. And I should make it clear, my book is not intended to say this should happen. My book is intended to say this is likely to happen. This is coming down the track, and we should think about ways in which we do or don't want to regulate it, including things like subsidizing the process in the developing world.
Okay, next caller with Hugh. Hi, Hugh. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
I've got two things that aren't being talked about. One is biohacking. And that is, all of our technology is accelerating very quickly into the hands of amateurs. So computers went into the hands of amateurs in 74, and we know where that went. Nobody ever wanted computer viruses, but ethicists and law didn't get a lot of choice on that. Already a CRISPR kit can be gotten for less than $100. The second problem has to do with selection. If we do these selections, we're not going to get a Stephen Hawking, and we're sure as heck not going to get a Charles Steinmetz. I don't know how he made it through Ellis Island, but General Electric was eternally grateful. The guy was a dwarf. He was also an engineering genius and provided half their patents during the 30s and 40s. You really don't know enough to select.
Okay, Hugh, thank you for the question.
On the second point, I think parents are likely to select against people with disease. The question about whether people who have disabilities are, as a result of the disabilities, more or less likely to be importantly creative is an interesting one. Maybe being a dwarf led to that creativity. Maybe it was completely irrelevant to it and was just a coincidence. From any parent's perspective, avoiding the immediate suffering that may come with a disability is probably going to outweigh the chance that you've eliminated a Van Gogh or someone else who suffers greatly. I'd rather have a kid who didn't commit suicide at 29 than have a brilliant, eternally remembered painter as a child. And I think most parents would. But the trade-off is it is a question to worry about and to think about. The biohacking I'm less concerned about because this process requires a mother who's willing to carry the baby, to carry the fetus. It requires an IVF center. It requires physicians and scientists and FDA approval. So the amateurs are not as likely to get involved in this. I am very worried about CRISPR and biohacking with respect to non-humans, where we could do an awful lot without anyone noticing, let alone regulating it. But humans, we pay more attention to.
Now, we have the religious, the faith concern, you know, especially the people who are pro-life, and they don't like the use of stem cells. But even though we've have big-name politicians in Texas who are big pro-lifers and don't like stem cells, but they don't hesitate in going to be injected with stem cells when they have back problems, do you think that will become the, you know, they may object to it, but they will use the technology?
Some people will, some people won't. I don't think the religious objections will be enormous, but for some people, religious or philosophical objections will lead them to choose not to use it. Specifically on stem cells, these are not the sort of stem cells that people have objected to, because these stem cells are not made by destroying embryos. They're made by taking your skin, turning it into an induced pluripotent stem cell, and then turning it into an egg or sperm. But I do think there will be religious people who have objections to this. Interestingly, even though we have a very strong right to life movement in the United States, and even though the right to life movement has great qualms about IVF because a lot of leftover embryos are made and destroyed, we have the least regulation of in vitro fertilization of any country, any developed country in the world. So when it comes to making babies, I think our government and our politics tends to leave us pretty hands-off.
Do you think there will be a genetics cold war where nations are in competition to create the best, healthiest, smartest generation?
So I think it's possible. I don't think it's terribly likely because, and this is the important secret about all of genetics, it's not usually as important as most people think it is. The more you know about genetics, the more you realize that if the question is nature or nurture, the answer is almost always yes. So we know a lot about ways to change genes to make people of very low intelligence. We know nothing about how to change genes to make people smarter. Give them good nutrition, read to them, send them to good schools, keep them healthy. That makes kids smarter. But we don't know squat about what genetic changes make kids smarter. And those are the sorts of things I think countries would be most interested in. Does that mean that, you know, North Korea may not decide to try to breed a generation that even more deeply loves the deer leader? Probably not. Scientific accuracy doesn't always affect dictatorships.
Sure, and then you could get the genetic information of Michael Jordan, and there's no guarantee he'll even make the NBA because of all the X factors of his personality that made him want to win.
So yep. Environment and chance play huge roles in all our lives.
Henry Greeley, director of the Center for Law and Bioscience, Stanford University. The book is The End of Sex. This is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for tuning us in.